The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
Well, when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so I opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
Welcome along to the GAR. This is the Hurling Show on a Thursday. We were nearly going to finish last Thursday, but there's enough going on that we'll bring you one more show. Cheddar's in the studio as usual on a Thursday, and we have a special guest pundit today, Liam Rush. Well, Liam, welcome to the show.
Nice to be here.
Well, you're the one man I want to ask first. We'll throw this to you because you've played in it. You've played in the new Leinster League, and while Munster got all the spotlight, there was a few cracking games in Leinster as well. The very first one, Ye against Dublin, was one of them. Has this been the greatest championship in hurling of all time?
Certainly in my memory it has, yeah. I just think the old style, yeah, you could say, you know, the best team should turn up in the day and win, but it, you know, it was a good bit easier, and if you had an off day at the very start, you were done, you know, whereas I think now this really shows kind of what teams have got and the strength and depth, and just gives us a chance, I suppose, to develop throughout the year.
Yeah, but there's been classics, right? So we're talking about how many classics would you usually get in a championship? Now, I'm not talking about football where you could count it one or two, I'll give you that, but in hurling, even back in the good old days, you might think back and go, well, that was a classic semi-final, and you might pick a Munster final and maybe one or two more. Here, this is what we had. So down in Munster, we had Cork and Limerick, where Limerick had 14 men and they got the last puck of the game, Kyle Hayes, to equalise. We had Cork and Tip, where Tip came back out of the dead. They were completely gone at half time. It was the year of comebacks. Tipperary and Clare, late Clare goal to snatch the win. Waterford Tipperary, huge Tipperary comeback again. Austin Gleeson on the line, the controversy around the goal. In Leinster, Wexford Kilkenny, where Wexford came back, or Kilkenny came back in the second half. Dublin against Kilkenny, where Kilkenny came back. Wexford and Dublin, Dublin came back against G. Galway Dublin in the last round, where there was nothing to play for. Ye still came back and nearly got a result. You had Galway Kilkenny in the Leinster final replay, huge comeback. Then you had Kilkenny Limerick in the quarter final, where Kilkenny are four down to get a Richie Hogan goal and they're two up, and then Limerick come. So Kilkenny and Limerick came back in that. The two semi-finals we don't even need to talk about. Two unbelievable comebacks from Clare in both games, a big comeback from Limerick in the other semi-final, and then in the final we have a huge Galway comeback that nearly doesn't quite get there. It's like, I've never, like, these type of comebacks, like, this is talking 6-7 point comebacks where teams are completely gone out of a game, Cheddar. Like, this is unprecedented to have that many exciting, nail-biting games with huge comebacks in one year.
Yeah, no, I'd say in my time looking at it, I've never seen as many, and I agree with you on that, Willie. And look, it's great that in the first year of the restructured championship that we actually had that, because if it had been the other way around, people would be saying, let's go back to the old.
Yeah, we're never going back now, lads.
So I think there's a great positivity about that. But look, I wouldn't get too far ahead of myself either, because next year it could be the other way around. I think I've rarely seen in my lifetime so many teams on an even level. But I said the last day on the show that I'm very surprised with the amount of competitive matches, considering where hurling is going now. You have 30 points per game. That's a lot of scoring, and you would think that there would be bigger gaps between winning and losing, and there isn't. So this year, I think, might be a little bit of an anomaly when we look at it in 10 years' time, but we'll certainly take it. And I think it really sets it up for next year, because if we look at Munster next year, you're going to have Tipperary and Waterford coming back with a bounce, new management, serious, serious teams, serious, serious potential. And I think in Leinster as well, I'm very conscious Liam's beside me here, but I think Dublin have huge potential in terms of their development and that, and you know, will certainly put it up to and have a real potential of winning a Leinster championship. I think there's great evenness about the teams here. So I do see next year, you know, maybe not being as exciting as this year, but certainly there'll be an awful lot of close games, and it will be very, very competitive.
That's the thing, and it is the, we've never in my memory had that many teams on a similar level. Like, Kilkenny have come back to the pack. Galway and Tip, while they won All-Irelands impressively, haven't been as strong the following year, Liam. Like, there's nobody in the top nine, and with respect to Offaly, they're a little bit behind, but there's nine teams now, and they could all put their hands up and say Wexford might be a little bit outside that, but like, I'll put you into that mix next year. Like, obviously you want to progress and think you're in that mix. There's so many teams that are dreaming about winning in All-Ireland. Have like a, it's
fantastic. I could, like, going back to the 90s, I suppose, when they're my earliest memories of watching it as well, the likes of Clare and them coming through. I think Yeah, to answer your question, I'd say 4, maybe 5 classics a year. Like, and that'd be at a push.
Yeah.
The last 10 years, I think the generational team that was Kilkenny there for a decade kind of skewed the whole thing. I'd say even if you had this format, you know, in their prime,
yeah,
they probably still would have romped it. You know, you might have seen a couple of closer games. You know, and with the injuries and fatigue, you might have seen a few. They might not have as many, maybe, but they still have some depth. So, you know, conversely, you could say, oh, they would have walked it again.
Yeah.
But yeah, look, it's fantastic. I think there is a great leveling off. Not a great leveling off, but Kilkenny set the tone there. I had the misfortune in the first half of my career to come up against them. You know, year in, year out, yeah. And all we were ever doing, all anyone was trying to do, was catch them. And I think we did develop, and I think the players coming through got up. Not just us, but I think everyone was chasing them. And I think, you know, they might have come back a little with, you know, what to say, they all retired basically. You know, there's not that many of them left now. It's the younger brigade who are kind of my go, or a couple of years old, with the likes of Richie Hogan and Fenley and that. But the rest of them are, you know, the rest of that team have gone, and everyone else was making, you know, marginal improvements to try and get there. So I think, you know, what you basically have now is everyone's just come to a point where, you know, there's going to be the poke of a ball between almost everybody.
Yeah,
yeah, and I might just add to that, Liam, as well. I think that there's going to be a significant difference in the next couple of years. I think the structuring of hurling now is very different this year than what we've seen in other years, and the level of game planning and coaching and all of that, and, you know, different game plans per game and that, is at a very, very high level at the minute, certainly the highest I've seen. So I think we're going to see a lot of that in the next couple of years. We'll see, you know, different, I suppose, setups and different structures of hurling as we're going along, and, you know, the old thing of just off the cuff hurling as such, I think we'll see less of that as such. So look, there are a lot of the things that I think we'll be really interested in looking at over the next couple of years.
Yeah, so I mentioned all these classics, right? And for me, the final wasn't a classic. It was a scrappy game littered with wides until the 68th minute, when Galway decided to actually come and start playing and actually kind of throw the kitchen sink at it. And the last 10 minutes was just pure drama, which you would walk away going, Jesus, that was brilliant. But in reality, the first 68 minutes was a routine win for Limerick, which was incredible stuff. But, like, I mean, we'll talk about that game just briefly, because you didn't get to have your say on it. What was your take on it? Like, for me, Limerick were just by far the better team for nearly the whole game.
Yeah, definitely. I think they brought more to the table. In fairness to them, they seized the day. I think I was listening to Tommy Walsh, and he was saying in the build up, like, you just don't let it pass you by, and they really didn't.
Yeah.
And Graham Mulcahy just epitomised it, didn't he, in the first few scores. He just was buzzing around everywhere. I'd agree with you. It wasn't, you know, a classic in terms of it wasn't like two heavyweights trading score for score. It was, you know, Limerick could go up by 4, Galway clawed back, Limerick could go up, and I mean, by the end of it, they go up by 9, and Galway just started clawing it back. So it was riveting stuff, you know. I mean, if Limerick had won out by 7 or 8, we'd have kind of been saying it was a bit of a letdown.
Yeah.
But, you know, given what Galway did in the last 10 minutes, you know, it certainly added to the entertainment value.
Jeez, it definitely did, Cheddar. What did you think? Like,
I thought technically, Willie, it was a very poor game, actually. Probably the worst technical All-Ireland I've seen in a long number of years, to be honest with you. I thought tactically it was terribly interesting. I think if you look at the amount of spilled balls and missed passes and mistakes made, that actually resulted in scores to both teams, but particularly against Galway, was at a very, very, very high level. And obviously the shooting was poor for that quality of player. And, you know, and I know there's pressure in All-Ireland and all of that. I think tactically it was in a very different level altogether. I think the way Limerick set up, but more importantly maybe the way Galway set up, allowed Limerick get their game plan going very early in the game, and they definitely grasped it. And I spoke on the show last week, you know, would Galway try and hurl their way around their half back line, or in the Limerick half hour line, in other words, keep them busy by hurling, or will they just take them on physically? And I think they chose to take them on hurling, brought Colin Mannion out, and again Joe, you know, done the same thing without the field a little bit. And I just felt that tactically Limerick conceded an awful lot to Galway in actually doing that, because Limerick straight away got into their game plan. And I was listening to the show on Monday, Willie, but I actually think that the best part of Limerick's hurling was maybe 10 or 15 minutes before half time, because the amount of ball that they were able to spray into the full forward line on the ground, I think you mentioned that, it was actually dribbling on the ground to them. Like, that shouldn't happen at that level in terms of a defensive screen. And, you know, I spoke about Limerick the last day, that they didn't have that huge huge amount of options in their forward line in terms of how they were set up differently, because you do need to bring something different to big games like this. But they did. Their half forward line just done as they always do. They play well out of the field. Actually, I disagree with Kyle, because the facts and the statistics from the way Limerick play is they step well back to field, particularly on puck outs and that. But that leaves an awful lot of room inside. And the movement of the three Limerick full forwards, and you know, there was definitely structure to that, because if we look at Seamus Flanagan, fantastic player to receive the ball, but there was actually a stage in the first half where he actually stood right at the corner flag under the Cusick stand. He actually stood right at it, and obviously under instructions. And strangely enough, the Galway back followed him right to it instead of sort of hedging 20-30 yards out and cutting off that ball to him. So you can just imagine the amount of space Limerick were able to create in the full forward line. And the movement, I've rarely seen Graham Mulcahy play on the other side of the field. He doesn't do that because that's not his strong side. And yet the interchange between their two corner forwards and between Flanagan and between Mulcahy, because they played Gallan full forward for most of it, was very impressive. And even if you look back at some of the stuff that their wing forwards do, when the ball goes inside, their runs is almost from the sideline. So they're obviously, I'd love to be a fly on the wall in the instructions to the Limerick team, because they're either obviously creating channels through the half back line to be able to put ball into space in the full forward line, or they're creating space in the full forward line for players to be able to move on. But you've got leggy players with the likes of Gerard Hegarty making those runs off the sideline, coming in on the ball, very, very dangerous, and a very, very, very structured way of playing. And I thought Galway conceded that a little bit. And I thought he conceded a little bit as well by actually playing John Hanbury. Clearly he was injured. In my view, John Hanbury is probably the most improved player in Ireland this year. I said that a number of times in the show already. But was really caught for pace last Sunday, and was struggling really from earlier on. And the Galway full back line were really trailering around after Limerick forwards. And, you know, we all know when that happens, you're in serious trouble, because you're not competing then on the breaking ball at all. So I just thought, and I suppose this was best shown. I think Galway did bring something to the table. Galway certainly, and Franny definitely tried to change things about Galway. I haven't seen Skehill go short, or very little going short, but last Sunday went short an awful lot of times to the corner back. But they spilled a lot of that ball, and it was poorly executed. It was done too slow, so it allowed even the likes of Graham Mulcahy, who wouldn't be a noted tackler, get up on his man and dispossess the ball. Like, that type of ball needs to be hit to the man coming into it. It needs to go directly to hand. He needs to turn, sprint outfield. He needs to be able to suck in a defending wing forward, pop that pass to maybe his full back coming at pace and in the opposite direction to him, and then break out into. But they didn't do that. They tried it a number of times, and they stayed trying it. So obviously Galway tried to, you know, change the way they played, not go long, because they knew well that the likes of Morrissey and Hegarty would be back in the half back line, and they'd mop those up. So I think Galway did work hard to try and change it, but they didn't execute it very well, which I suppose, Willie, brings me to another point that I spoke about Tipperary about earlier on in the year. You need a lot of time before matches now, and particularly, I mean, the matches that Liam is describing here earlier on, Leinster Championship and Munster Championship, Brown and Ramon, every one of them is in All-Ireland. You need a lot of time before those matches to be able to prepare yourself tactically for the way hurling is gone now, and I think that's something the GAA would need to look at for 2019.
Well, I think the puck outs, Liam, was a big thing for me, because Limerick were standing maybe 10 metres off the full back line. They were goading Skehill into giving it to them, and then he'd give it to them, and Flanagan and Mulcahy would light down onto them. So immediately, instead of having a free puck up the field, the corner back is under pressure, and so he's just getting rid of it. So Limerick, you know what I mean, it's terrible ball going up there rather than a free puck going up there.
Yeah, I'll be honest, it just didn't look like they'd practice it that much. It is not Galway's style. It's not their forte. They never go short. I mean, it's just a last resort. I'm surprised they even bothered. I would have thought they'd just say, okay, you know, this is our tactic, we're sticking to it, we're going to beat you at it regardless. Like, basically, like Galway's template is basically Kilkenny from 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It's literally transplanted.
It's weird.
And Kilkenny, Cody would never have said go short. So what's the point? You're going to hit it to a cornerback, he'll turn, he won't have a good a puck out as James Skehill, so say Hanbury gets it, he's not going to hit it as far as Skehill, even with a 20 yard bump. Skehill is a monumental poke out when he wants to. So I just didn't see the reason. I think, like, look, the reason I'd say that is because when either Toohey or Hanbury got it, they were left on an island. Like, they were hung out to dry. He needs to get that, and the fullback needs to come storming by, offering, just like football, offering a hand pass. It'll drag people away, even if it's not going to stop Flanagan going for him. It'll give him food for thought. Right, he might chip this off, I'll give him a yard. But as well as that, like, if two gets it, you need 6, 8, 9, 10 all coming short, because then they all go short. So that means the Limerick lads have to go with that's him. Right. Otherwise, McInerney gets it on his own 50 and he's a free puck into the full forward line. That happens once Kyle Hayes won't be dropping off again.
Yeah.
But they didn't look for it. They just weren't comfortable. It's something you have to practice because it's kind of a bit
there's
risky.
A lot of, yeah, there's a lot of things happening there. Yeah. And like I'd even say to you, on like because Nash's puckouts are obviously so good that teams are dropping off him as well. They want him to go to cornerback. Mm-hmm. So they've evolved that to Spillane and Donoghue take on their men, create the overlap, and they're gone, like what Cheddar's saying. So Cork are ready for that.
Galway weren't
ready for what happens when we go short.
Sure, both Clare and Limerick tried to stop Cork by doing that. Sure, it didn't work. Like the cornerbacks will get it. They're really good. I mean, if Mark Coleman has 3 yards on his man, they'll chip a pass to him. He'll turn and go and do the same. And they just must practice it relentlessly.
And Liam, the beauty about that is the quality of the wing backs and midfielders now, that their scoring range, they are in scoring range, so they will shoot long range pints.
Yeah.
And you have to have that in your arsenal to do that. And we spoke a number of times about James Cahill earlier on, actually, Willie, and we actually pointed out that a couple of times, that this is going to come back to bite Galway sometime. And Liam has explained it really, really well here about how this thing works. And it probably needs to be even a little bit more sophisticated than that now. So if Morrissey and Hegarty were back to field, why wasn't he able to find Aidan Hart and Padraig Mannion out on the sideline? And you know, Liam is the point, you know, did they rehearse that really, really well, and did they have time to do it, maybe is another thing, because it definitely hurt them. And you know, considering the amount of wides
it hurt them. They went short so long, so many times they went short.
And
yeah,
like if you've done that a couple of times, I mean, Padraig Mannion is well known as having long range shooting ability, and you know, if he had been found, picked up, or even a little bit more sophisticated, you look at some of the stuff that Nash does and some of the lads do now, you know, that sort of decoy run in the middle of the field, then turn and come back to the puck out and take it, and maybe pop it into a wing back coming out the field, you know, it needs to be a little more sophisticated even than just reaching the corner back now, because players are so quick they will close that. Look, these are some of the things we would measure the quickness to the tackle. How quick can you get to the tackler, to the man with the ball, to be able to shut that down?
Yeah.
So if that's the level of detail that the opposition are coaching into their players, you know, so that just tells you that, you know, you need to have a pretty high sophistication, and just having one long poke out to even to the likes of Liam here beside me, who will win most, and I know Johnny Glynn will as well, but you know, defences are so cute now and how to actually cut that out, that they'll turn over the ball and they'll probably put it back over your bar. That's how serious it is.
See, this is what, we'll just finish up on this now in a second, but this is what I think with Galway, while Hayes, while Morrissey and while Garrod Hegarty will drop off their men for puckouts, they're not dropped off that far that they're not in striking distance. So like, I mean, if you're giving it to them, suddenly they're on them by the time they have in their hand, then I'm under pressure. And Limerick hunted impact so much, it was reminding me of the Tyrone footballers back in the day. Like, it was ravenous. Galway just didn't know what to do. Like, they actually didn't know what to do. Limerick dictated all the whole game. Their system dictated the game.
Yeah, they have to imagine it was time constraints that led them not to be, you know, to be unprepared, because Limerick have been doing the same structure virtually the whole championship.
Limerick changed nothing in their system.
Nothing. They just did it the same thing against Cork. Cork are just better, so you didn't realise, because Cork are just better at
slicker
going around. I mean, just to touch on his point from earlier, if you compare the standard and just the crispness of striking and control in the Cork Limerick semi-final to the final,
absolutely,
it looks like two different sports.
Absolutely. Yeah,
I was sat in Croke Park watching that game thing, and this is some of the kind of purest hurling I've actually ever seen live. And then, you know,
just to cut you off, it's Cork versus Limerick, it's almost like hurling that you'd play on a computer game.
Yeah,
like it's just ball to hand, like. Yeah. Not that far away, you know.
I mean, the two teams lent itself to that style. You know, they're not like Galway are. Obviously, they do rely on pure physicality and putting ball in danger zones as quickly as possible. You know, and it's you know, it's a commendable style. It gets results, and you know, they just didn't execute when they got their chances. You know, you could say they were lucky. Like, I was asked for a prediction in the run up, and I said, look, if they don't improve that score and that rate of return there, they'll lose, because Limerick are pretty good. I mean, they staggered over Kilkenny and over Clare just by shooting wide after wide after wide. Like, 9 point win or 9 point lead against Clare, they should have actually been 15 up, you know. They're 7 or 8 wides with that as well. So
I'd agree with Liam on that. I think you're looking at sort of pace, possession, precision type hurling, and certainly that game was the best I've ever seen, that game that Liam referred to. And you know, when you look at Galway, they just spilled a lot of that ball, and that, you know, they gave away scores by it. I'd just say one other thing. Galway, a lot of Galway players just seem to lose form a little bit as the year went on, but certainly they seemed to lack a little bit of energy last Sunday. Now, whether that was to do because Limerick were holding onto the ball and not allowing them get on the ball, or whether it were just lack of energy, they certainly lacked a little bit of form, and I thought a little bit of lack of energy. And the speed of coming out of the defence, we just spoke about it, about that puck out, that needs to be done at sprinting pace, because you need to break tackles here with pace. And it just didn't look like they were ambling along with the ball, and they just looked a little bit of a lack of energy to the team.
I saw a stat there, it's from Barry Cleary, he's a stats man on Twitter. I'm not going to say his Twitter handle because it's a bit of a weird one, but he's saying it's a squad game, so the average number of different scores from play for each game was 8 for the 2018 championship, so 8 different scores per game, right? So Dublin are coming in bang on the average, Liam, so you've 8 different fellas scoring, which is good. Waterford have 9.25, they're top. Limerick have 8.92, nearly 9 different scores on average. Then you have Clare, you've Dublin bang on the average, you've Galway just below the average of the amount of different scorers, you know, so threats all over the field. And at the bottom, which doesn't surprise me, is Wexford, who seem to depend on 3 or 4 different fellas for scores. And you have Kilkenny, interestingly, second last from bottom at 6.67 different scores per game. And maybe this is just the way hurling has evolved. It's almost total hurling now, where there's point scorers popping up everywhere. It's a fluid game. Then maybe it's because the benches are coming on earlier, so they're chipping in for scores, which maybe Kilkenny don't have a bench. Kilkenny probably might not, or Wexford might not have a stronger one. So there's probably a few different factors leading into this.
Definitely, I mean, number one is probably the ball. The reason, when Christy Ring was playing, the reason he didn't have 8 scores is he couldn't score from outside 70 metres, you know, the ball would just die on you. As well as that, I think it's a reaction to tactics, just no different than Gaelic football. Like, I mean, if you're training a Gaelic football team, the lads you'd want practicing most of their shooting are your wing backs and cornerbacks. So, like, if your wing forward is dropping off, you know, say a midfielder goes tearing off with the ball, the wing forward will go chasing him, he loops back, free shot for the wing back. You're seeing that 5, 6, 7 times a game. So your halfback line needs to be able to shoot, you know, tag in there, your midfielders are always in scorers, and you know, you're meant to have 6 good scorers up top. So I think, you know, I think as well as that, teams are going away from route one only. They're playing a lot more tactical through the lines, or people, you know, various teams have different tactics, but there's a lot less. Galway are probably, you know, are still going strong at that. They're target, like, they look at the final there, they targeted Johnny Glynn how many times, so you'd be expecting the 3 lads up top to get most of the scores. And you know, they actually, I'm not dogging them at all, I think they created an unbelievable amount of chances, particularly the 2 Clare games. But you know, whatever, be it fatigue or just loss of form or something like that, they were just hitting shots wide that they would have sailed over last year, you know. Yeah. So it's just a strange one.
Maybe that's mental tiredness or something, I don't know, or tuning out. We want to move on to the scenes from Limerick, lads, because 80,000 people thronged the streets, and I don't know, you'd want to have the heart of a stone or maybe be rivals, Liam. I don't know what you're like a current player, but I was looking down from the Hogan stand, that full time whistle went, and I felt emotional looking at it. It was unbelievable, because 45 years, and I remember 94 really, really well. I was young, I think 16, but I've never forgot that. It was like, I've never seen anything like it, and the heartbreak. We had the live show and we had Joe Quaid on it, and he was a great character. But like, I mean, Limerick deserved this cheddar. Like, they've been the brides, like John Kiley said, they've been the bridesmaids, they've been the hard luck story nearly of hurling that maybe Mayo are on the football, and then the final whistle blew and they finally did it, and it was just fantastic to see. And everything I've seen all week, from player interviews we might get to in a second, to just the supporters coming out both along the streets and in the Gaelic grounds, it's just brilliant to watch a new team like that win the All-Ireland.
First of all, I think, Willie, look, nobody deserves anything. You've got to work hard at it, and Limerick worked extremely hard at it this year, and we're very, very lucky as well in a number of instances that we might talk about later. I'm not surprised that, you know, we spoke a lot about the Limerick support. It's massive, but it's massive for a lot of sports. It's massive for rugby. There was a time when it was massive for soccer as well, and the market's feeling that would be jammed. It's massive for horses. It's equally massive for hurling. And look, this has been built up over a number of years, I suppose, this support. They've won 2 All-Irelands out of 3 in under 21, and won 3 in a row a couple of years ago, and won minors in that as well. So it hasn't come from nowhere. And I think another part of it that really appealed to the public was the youth in the team. They're a very young team. And that always appeals to supporters. And I think the last point was maybe the style of hurling was you know, it's nearly infectious to see the positivity about hurling and that to them. So I think there was a lot of things here mixed into that that really brought in the Limerick support. But look, it's always been there. I've been at an awful lot of matches where Limerick played, and I spoke about a few of them more on the show. Incidentally, I was actually at the game in 73 in Croker. And they always bring a massive crowd. This is not new. But look, if when Offaly were in the final in 81, I can tell you the amount of flags and all of the stuff that was around Offaly was massive. So that's just the way things are. It's I suppose it's a freshness in a county, and when you win something, then there's huge support to do that. Limerick is a big city. It's, you know, it's Ireland's third largest city. So we shouldn't be surprised by seeing this. It's cool. Very welcome, and it's brilliant to see. And I love the energy and the madness that they bring to it. And, you know, I think they've really, I suppose, it's been a great hurling year, but they bookended it with, you know, a great crowd behind them and great colour behind them. Incidentally, I was walking up the road to the match the last day, and there was this person in front of me, a gentleman and a lady, and the lady was let's say, dressed in incredible Limerick colours. And I was actually looking out at the match, and then I saw this lady running across the field, and it turns out to be Keane's mum.
Right.
And you know, we were just actually marking on her going up to the match. You know, God, it wouldn't be brilliant to be following somebody and to have that interest in the game to tug yourself out like that. And you know, it was just brilliant looking. It was, you know, and then, you know, an hour and a half later, I see her sprinting across the field, and then I find out yesterday who she was. I think, you know, it's a fantastic story.
Yeah, Keane Lynch is saying there's a warrant out for his mother's arrest the way the stewards in Croke Park kind of. They're a little.
She'll never be let back in.
I'd love to know what she said to get past him, because there's no getting past these fellas. Like, they've got this power now, and they hold the nets up and they don't let them out. But she definitely got out. But Shane Dowling was saying something, and it's just on what Cheddar says. Like, they're a feel good story, and I think the media like them because there's been no media ban with Limerick all year. Now, I tried Declan Hannan, he came on the show. John Kiley will come on to the show, it was great. I tried Keane Lynch, he didn't reply to my text. Do you know, so Keane didn't want to do it, that's fine. Declan did want to do it, that's fine. You know, so it was left up to their players to go, if you want to do it, you can do it. If you don't want to do it, rather than go, none of you are doing it, which is like that in a lot of counties, you know, even like most of the big counties. But Shane Dowling said something which I thought was surprising, because you're reading all these things and they're a real team. And Dowling says they go out together after every championship match, management and players together. Now, I thought that was unusual considering the Munster League is a week, you know, week on week. I was like, Jesus, like, I mean, even I might stay in after a championship game if I had another big one. But they thought that this was important. They eat ice creams after training, an ice cream van would come up, and it's just relaxed. They're young fellas, they can recover, and it seems, it's almost like a breath of fresh air the way they look after these young fellas.
Yeah, not even how they look after them, it's how they don't look after them. They give them a lot of trust and a lot of
empower
independence.
Them, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, it's probably coming from Derek McGrath School of Coaching, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I was reading there the other day that there were four or five of them in the one the Fitzgibbon Cup there. And
that's a lovely little story.
Yeah, in February. And, you know, they were just let off and told, right, you know, they won it on a Sunday, was it? And they said, look, see you in training Tuesday. Grand.
No, I think they won it on the Saturday. And they had an away league game.
So they had two
game.
Nights. There,
yeah,
you go.
They were given the freedom of Limerick.
Yeah,
right? And there was five of them. And they had a league game away to Antrim, which you might say in Division 1B, this could be a tricky one. They were said, lads, don't be silly. We don't want to see you here. Go and enjoy yourself. That's a big deal. Now, how many players do we see togging out for the counties? Clare centre-back, Cleary, number one, a couple of Wexford lads, after being in that same final. Do you know what I mean? It's just a different way of looking at it, and I'm glad Limerick won it with this kind of open-minded management
style. Yeah, like that's a potential manager should take note. That type of move or wins you a lot of credit.
It does.
I mean, down the line when you're telling lads to cancel plans or, you know, to turn down things in the rest of their lives, and look, we're going training four nights in a row, or we're going away for the weekend,
yeah,
sorted out. You know, the management one don't have to say it, but you know, it will be remembered, oh look, sure, they let us off when it was important. Grand, we'll sort this out, you know.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So I think it is a good bit of trust. Like, on the whole, so much made of drinking bans and things like that. I'm trying to think. I'm trying to think when was the last time we had like an official drinking ban. It must have been years ago. You know, that way, I don't know what other teams do it differently, but in my experience, it's unspoken. Well, one, you don't really get the time to go on man sessions, because I mean,
you can't,
the way the league is that tight, you might, if you had a game on a Saturday, you might go out even if you have one the next week, or you might do something together. But I can see what Limerick mean. I would much prefer to see that culture come in of, a la the rugby, we'll all go out for...
But together.
Yeah, exactly. We'll all go out for a few and we won't go nuts. I mean, was it the Tipperary or the Waterford doctor a few years ago came out and said someone's going to die at the current rate because... because they're not drinking for... You're not drinking for 2 months and you're going flat out for a night.
Yeah,
you know?
That's very unhealthy. Yeah, that is very... But I always found... And Liam Cairns, when he was over us, he would give us that leeway. So he would tell us, look, you can go out 4 times during the league. You pick which ones. There's 7 games. You're not going out after all of them. But the one thing, if you go out, we're all going out together. And we're all sticking together. So there's no lads heading back to Carlow, which a lot of the lads from Southleash would usually go out. But, you know, Chris Conway, all these lads, but Carlow's their hometown. The rule was that if we go out, we pick the nights we want to go out. It's agreed. And we all stick together. And like, it was... Like, we were delighted with this because Mick O'Dwyer would go 6 months, don't want to hear about it, there's no drinking, and we were like, this is fantastic, we're in control of when we go, and number two, everybody's together.
Look, this is a very difficult subject and a very, very difficult one for managers, I would say. Ollie, I don't know any manager that would want to impose a whole set of rules and keep 30 lads away from him and join themselves, but there's a whole lot of things here that have a real risk of capsizing your season, and very early. I mean, you mentioned there about, you know, players being free the following Sunday. That might be fine in your league. They had 36 on their panel. Nearly the whole 36 of them were actually on Fitzgibbon Cup teams all over the place. And they had a club that were in an All-Ireland Championship. That may be very different for Carlo, who need James Dyle, who has played... James Dyle has played with Carlo IT in a Fitzgibbon Cup final, and the following Sunday they're playing in a game that could actually set their whole season. So saying, you know, having Carlo need James Dyle to play and cannot afford to play without him. So I think you've got to look at it on a case-by-case basis, first of all. I think every manager would like to be able to free up his players and give them a little bit of leeway in these things.
But just on that, because, like, even from player welfare point of view, playing a Fitzgibbon the day before a league match is dangerous to begin with. Do you know, like, from an injury point of view? Number two, and I think some managers don't think about this, and this is the money in the bank and the goodwill. And because, like, if a manager wants players to play for them, that little gesture to those players, I don't think he can even imagine how much these lads love John Kiely for just that was a lovely thing to do. He could have brought us up to, you know, like, I think managers don't realise the effect of giving.
I disagree with that, Willie. That's to be honest.
Not saying you, Cheddar, but
I know. I'd say the majority of modern managers would look at that and would be looking at player welfare the whole time. To the extent that we'd be looking at what they're doing during the week and working and whether they're studying and how can they help them. The amount of player welfare that managers would look at now would be phenomenal. I'm only going on the ones I know. Maybe there are others that don't. But I just want to go back to the other point, and I think the point was mentioned about the dropped liquor and the drink and those type of things. And again, I don't know any manager that would say don't have a drink. Incidentally, look, there's enough science there to show that drink is not good for elite athletes, and there's enough science there to say it takes 7 days for it to go out of the body and all of those things.
Yeah.
And we can't look at having an elite performance in your dressing room and then have something complete and have a view of something completely different and drinking that. But that's not the point I want to make. The point I want to make is this. First of all, do not set rules for your team, because once you set rules, you're now in a disciplinary situation when somebody breaks them. I think the real issue here is team values. What do the team themselves set as their values? And one of them will always be honesty and trust and so on and so on. But if you go down the road of, you know, some people having a few pints in different places or something like that, and then somebody has a bad performance and, you know, somebody puts out the rumour then, oh, sure, he was on the drink last Thursday night or something like that. He may not have been, but the manager starts to lose trust in him, and worse still, his teammates start to lose trust in him. And those type of an environment is fatal in a dressing room.
Yeah.
So it's
But do you think a lad would do that because after the match last week he would have loved a bit of closure and a few points and he wasn't allowed, so he'll sneak off. Whereas if you give them something, you know what I mean, you'll get that in return, that trust back.
And that's the point I'm making, Ollie. It's not a general way of doing things. It'd be great if it was, and I don't know any manager that wouldn't want it that way. You've got to look at it on a case by case basis and the needs of that particular time, and you've also got to look at it, the behaviours of the player, because you should know your players intimately, and you should know, you know, whether players have, you know, past histories of these type of things or whatever the case may be. You've got to know all of these things. It's not as simple as just giving a complete carte blanche avalanche to something. And I can guarantee you, I'd be gobsmacked if Limerick actually did that. What has come out here is something a little bit different. Of course, you need to enjoy it. I absolutely agree with that. Everybody's amateur here, including the managers. So everybody needs to actually enjoy it here. Yeah. Otherwise, that you won't keep coming back.
But do you think
it's not as easy as it's set out here.
Obviously, the negative impacts of alcohol, are they offset by the team spirit that you create? And is Limerick proof of, like, the way they work for each other, the connection they have together, and whether we like it or not, we're Irish, and our culture does revolve around pubs, whether we like it or not. But does the the intangibles of those team spirits and those bonds, are they created through going out together after games, or, you know, more than the negative impact that night might have on your body?
I think so, anyway. Like a team that beers together wins together, you know? I just think there's a lot. There's a lot to be said for it. You know? Obviously, Limerick managed to do it, so I'm going with that.
Oh, well, you've got proof here.
I'm holding them out now.
Like, I feel empowered with my opinions now since reading this.
Well, is that Pat Gilray's phone I see ringing there?
Take notice.
I know. I think just to wrap that up, I think it's absolutely critical that you have a fun environment in the dressing room, and that can be created. You just need to be very, very careful that doesn't turn into be a drinking culture environment.
Yeah.
And look, I'll just use another analogy. I suppose if you have a name for getting up early in the morning, you can stay in bed all day. Well, look, if you have a name for being a drinking team, it's very hard to lose that. And you cannot, on one hand, say we have an elite performance culture in our dressing room, and on the other hand, say that, you know, we have a drinking performance culture in that. I absolutely agree. You have to have fun. And you can actually have that. You can actually have that without the drinking culture at all. And you can, you know, you can have separate sessions where there's a bit of crack going on in the team. Why would you keep coming to training? It would be very, very boring if you didn't have that fun in the dressing room.
Yeah, okay, quickly, Graham Mulcahy's stat, lads, which I thought was very, very interesting and is very unusual in modern hurling, where the skill level is through the roof. So all of Graham Mulcahy's scores were off his left-hand side in this year's championship. 3 goals and 16 points. Now, he got a goal against Carlow which wasn't off his left side, but he took the shot off his left side, it was saved, and then he flicked in the rebound. He's not unusual for, like, I mean, a corner forward. Like, this maybe just feeds into the Limerick system and the way he's breaking across the line, and he's always free, and he's popping up with a pass back that in a pocket. Like, how unusual is that? I'm not a hurling person, Cheddar. Is for a corner forward to score every score off his same side?
No, it's not unusual, Woolley.
It's not.
No, it's not unusual, and it's not unusual for a back either to be always clearing off the one side. And I think, you know, in the next couple of years, you will see, video analysis in teams doing profiling on separate players, particularly on players that sort of exhibit the same behaviour the whole time. And there's a number of them that actually do that. So if you're a cornerback, you need to know this. And Liam and myself were just maybe chatting about this earlier on, that, you know, this is where the level of analysis and preparation of teams will go. You'll have a bank of information on all opposition players. Bear in mind, it's likely only to be 10 teams now in the championship from now on. This is very easy to do, of their behaviours. So I think, and I agree with you, first of all, I was actually delighted that Graham Mulcahy, has shown his skills. And we spoke about this last February and March, that this type of management in Limerick will bring the best out of Graham Mulcahy. And that has proven to be the case. But you will see backs reading the forwards much more, and forwards reading backs as well. So if you're going into tackle a back coming out of the field and you're a forward, you need to know, does he normally go to his right side to clear that ball, or to his left, is it off his left shoulder? Because your foot position, your body position in that block down is very, very different for both. So I think the level of analysis and the level of coaching on the technical stuff is going to improve an awful lot over the next couple of years, unless players become much more adept at playing off of both sides.
Yeah, okay. And I'd say Limerick had gone into that kind of detail, right? We're going to stand off the Galway full back line. We spoke about it. He's going to go short to Tuohy or Hambury. Now, you remember, Hambury's all left, so show him down the left side. Then he, you know what I mean? He's trapped. Absolutely, Limerick would have gone into that detail.
Yeah, the thing about Mulcahy, and I've chased him a couple of times, he turns on a sixpence.
Yeah.
So it doesn't even matter what side he's going to use, because you have to pay some respect to the other side. You have to pay some respect to his right.
Is he poor off his right? Or?
I don't even remember.
He just never used it.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't remember Zeynep Shudov now. But the thing is, if you don't, if you oversell yourself to his left, he might just jink by you. And then instead of going for a block on his left side, all of a sudden you're going for a hook on his left side with him past, you're going for a goal.
So you
can't really oversell yourself. That's why, you know, you might be thinking, oh, how is he getting away with this? He's getting away with it because, one, he turns before you have, and two, you can't just mark the left because he might just, you know, shimmy and go by you.
Okay, so because he's so nippy and so fast, it's almost like Paul Mannion in the football. He's very left, but because he's so fast, you can't get there. Yeah, you can't get there. And if you sell to the left, he'll go back around the long way on you. So he has you. He kind of has you without.
And I think that's why the structured hurling is so important, because generally speaking, the balls that go into Graham McCaughey are now one and one, where he has maybe 10-15 metres of space around him, so the defender doesn't have a backup defender to be able to close down that run that Liam has explained there. And generally speaking, and this is what happened to Galway backline, I thought a lot last Sunday, then you will let the forward go out and get the ball and wait till he turns and faces you, and even if you were to concede a point, you don't mind too much, you're not going to concede a goal. And you know, we had this discussion maybe a couple of weeks back, Willie, on this, why are there so many points now? And a lot of it is to do with that the precision of the ball going into the forward now is much, much higher than it ever was, and the amount of the mobility in the forward line, and particularly in the Limerick full forward line, to be able to drag the full back line away from one another, in other words, when they're able to back up one another, is such that the forward now has always pace. He just needs to get the ball in his hand, and he probably has a pint, and he's a chance of eyeballing you going by your tackle as well.
Yeah, okay, I get you. Right, lads, we're going to finish in part one here with visualisation. So Richie McCarthy's talking after the match. We obviously know Caroline Curid is in with them, and she's teaching them. She's a sports psychologist. Now, I'm holding my hands up here. You can pull me back into line here, and I know she's an unbelievable record, and I think she does a lot more than just sports psychology, but Richie McCarthy's starting some visualisation now. I'd say Richie would be on, historically maybe he might not have done it, but he's doing it now, and he says it felt way better. Visualisation is not used enough in the GAA. All week I had it in my head. Now, I'm very confused about visualisation, because I think this is a fancy term that is put on what players have done for donkey's ears, which is think about the game and think about your performance. So what because John Conlon actually recently was on the show, and he said he visualised 2013 final, right? And he went into the game thinking the marker, I think it was Egan he was marking, and he had been knocked out in the Munster Championship by a collision with him. It was accidental, but he went, I'm going to go over and I'm going to give him a little dunt, and I'm going to get an early score. And John Conlon got an early score, gave him the dunt, got an early score. Straight away, his script that he has in his head and his visualisation is working. He's empowered, he feels great. What if he doesn't get that early score? Like, I mean, do you have to rip this up, or are you confused? I don't get it. I honestly don't get it. I don't get how this is different to what, for example, I would have visualised my performance since I was bloody 15. What I'm going to do, like, I mean, give off the first few early balls, get myself into the game, all these things, think about the lad I was marking, think about what might even be said between us, all this. I was just thinking about the game. Now that's called visualisation, and it's meant to be some sort of magic thing that if you visualise it, it's going to happen. And I'm cynical. I think it's nonsense, Liam.
It was daydreaming in your day, wasn't it?
Daydreaming, yeah. I used to call it daydreaming. I'd visualise in my car going to training. am I being too cynical about this?
It's proven to work over someone who doesn't visualise at all. So there is that. I mean, there's that simple study that you'll see it in Thinking Fast and Slow and various psychology books going around. You put a group just practicing shots, and you put a group just visualising nothing but shots going the net, and the team that's visualising wins.
Really?
It just seems to happen again and again and again. Now, that works for, you know, basic motor skills or executing a basic skill, you know, might work for, you know, a golfer under no pressure, a basketball under no pressure. Add in the pressure of a tournament, and you
there
know
you
their minds start sticking, things change.
No, but the point I was going to make on it, sorry to cut you off, is like I was reading some athletes saying it works for them, and one like was a downhill skier, the other was a high jumper, and they're completely in control of their performance. Mm. I don't think you can visualise in GEA because there's so many moving parts, it's so unpredictable, and what you visualise for yourself, a forward has to depend on ball, he has to depend on not being hooked. You are not in control of what you're visualising. So like, I mean, I can't see how it works in hurling or in Gaelic football. I think players just say it because it's a buzzword and it makes it sound like they're preparing well. I'm not sold on it.
Yeah, well, you always hear the simple line, control the controllables. So
yeah.
I suppose if you're visualising, executing what you can actually, you know, do, the likes of Flanagan and Mulcahy the last day, right, forget about taking your touch of your scores. As soon as that short poke out goes, I'm going to hammer him. Or okay. If I see your old McInerney come storming out, I'm going to meet him with everything I've got. So, you know, Flanagan visualising it, makes it happen on the day, big turning point, you know what I mean? So,
okay.
So you could definitely over things like that. I think the most useful, or the best use I've ever made of it is, it's good for almost stopping yourself thinking about it. So if you're coming up to a huge game in a week and you say, like when you're visualising, you're technically now meant to go and sit in the dark room with the candles on or whatever, but you get yourself out. You get out of your normal environment, but it would stop you. I mean, otherwise it'd be bleeding. You'd be at the laptop and work or whatever you're doing and thoughts would be bleeding into your head 24/7, you know, especially in the run up to an All-Ireland, I imagine. So,
okay, so
know,
it's to get
just,
it done
yeah,
and
to control
stuff.
Your own head, yeah, okay. Just, you know, because thinking about it for a couple of hundred hours up to a game, that's definitely not going to lead to a
but
good performance.
Coming up to a big game, if you go into a dark room and think about it, you'll still come back out to your computer. Like, I mean, you know what I mean? Yeah, I'd be consumed by it in the week of a game. Like,
you're damned if you do, damned if you don't.
No, but in fairness, at least you've explained to me, like, I understand it a little bit better than I did already. Like, again, me just kind of trying to pick faults in it rather than actually kind of thinking. What's your thoughts on the Cheddar?
I know. Look, first of all, it's clear coming out of the Limerick dressing room that there was a lot going on about this. When you hear Richie McCarthy talking about visualisation, you know there was something serious. Now, there was a lot of serious preparation done in the Limerick team. And if you look at what Shane Dowland, you know, spoke a lot about it in one of his interviews after the game as well. And I'm not surprised that Carlin Currid has brought this into the team. Look, there's a lot of science behind this, first of all. This is not just hokey-pokey stuff. There's a lot of science behind it, built from a lot of research from, you know, fairly serious people in this field that will tell you that, you know, mental rehearsal, it can help elite athletes fire up their muscles in physiological situations and that, which is almost replicates what they would do in the real action. And you're right, I think there's been a lot of studies done in sort of downhill skiers and a lot of this type of area. So this is not just, you know, make you up stuff, but the real critical thing about this here is that you really need people who know their stuff here. This is a very, very serious area, a very, very specialist area. And introducing, you know, visualization into a dressing room and not knowing how it works and all of that would be a very dangerous thing to do. So I think, first of all, you cannot introduce it until you have a lot of the foundation blocks in place. You know, you really need a good team, obviously. You need a skillful team, and you need a team, particularly. But it's certainly icing on the cake of all of that area, and it certainly brings self-belief and confidence to players, you know, that they have mentally rehearsed something, and that when that's carried out, it, you know, brings a lot of self-belief to the team. And, you know, scientifically, it, you know, there's research proves it does work.
Right, okay. No, that's interesting. And well, I think maybe the visualizing the hits, maybe, or you know, at some stage in a game, and it's like something, even a tactic that you've talked about. I always remember if something you talked about works, it energizes you. It's like we're on it today. So maybe that's just your own little tactic that you want to happen. So maybe the point from John Conlon was maybe the wrong thing to maybe visualize it would be more.
I think the more vivid the image.
Tackling hard or a turnover is something you could definitely visualize, maybe. Or
yeah, I think they're sort of goal setting for team, which is related to this, Wally. And incidentally, I saw a lot of the pictures coming out of the dressing room where there was a lot of goals put up on the wall and that. But I think this is a medical issue. I'm not qualified in this, so I'm going to give the real non-medical explanation of this. But there are certain parts of the brain that are prompted by certain things, and mental imagery is one of them. And the message that gives to your muscles, allows them to perform to a higher level. And the science is there to prove that. So this is not just hokey-pokey stuff of you know, players going off and talking about things. There's a huge amount of science done by an awful lot of very qualified people in doing this, and that's why I'm saying that you know, this is a very poor explanation of that, and I certainly would like Caroline or, you know, some of the highly qualified people to give a better explanation than I'm giving it is. But it is very, very effective, and hugely effective when you have a good, hungry young team want to mop that up.
Yeah, we'll definitely get Caroline on the show. We'll definitely ask her to come on the show. Liam, quickly before we finish up here, have you got into the dark room and lit the candles and all that kind of thing?
I'm saving it for next year. Obviously not.
All right, we'll be back in part two and we'll pick our all-star team.
I'd never be allowed to go off and eat a heap of shite like him and go off a slob or whatever. Like, I was always doing a bit.
All I remember is I thought I was going to get clobbered on the way in there. I threw the ball up in the air. I don't know, it was pure luck, no, in fairness. Pure luck. It's fucking bullshit, as you see yourselves.
All right, lads, before we pick the All-Star team, we'll pick our Player of the Year and Young Player of the Year. So, like, I mean, Player of the Year for me, I've names written down here, and I can't see it being given outside of Joe Canning, Pádraig Mannion, Graham Mulcahy, and I put Tom Morrissey in here because I think, realistically, across all the games, while he wasn't great, I think it was in the semi-final, he was outstanding in most of the other ones. Have you anyone to add into that Player of the Year list? Liam, I'll start with you.
I think John Conlon deserves a mention.
Conlon, yeah.
Yeah, I think he was. I think Clare threw it away in the Munster final, really, just stopped. They stopped hitting on the ball. It doesn't make any sense, you know. So he definitely deserves a mention. I saw Brendan Mugler on Twitter making the case for him. I think he's top scorer from play, or he's
top
definitely
scorer
up there.
From play. He's top
and
scorer from play.
He's third or fourth most assists per game. So he's definitely in the running there. Bar those four
and him, it's hard to look outside those, Cheddar, isn't it?
Dahi Burke as well. No, I'd have to
Dahi Burke
in
could be in, like, no. I mean, TJ Reid back in the league. Now, we know the league means nothing anymore because the league, even next year, is just going to be a warm up competition again, because even 5 years time the league will be almost like the Burn Cup, because, like, we'll be getting ready for this Munster and Leinster league, and it's like, Jesus, lads, just get ourselves right for that. But, like, TJ Reid at the league final, if you wanted a Player of the Year, Cheddar, he was the player of the year.
Yeah, I would have included TJ in it. You know, bear in mind he's come back from injury, and I thought he started carrying Kilkenny, to be honest with you, this year in a lot of the matches. I do agree with Liam, and John Conlon definitely needs to be in it. I'm not so sure about Pádraig Mannion, to be honest with you. He's talked up a lot.
Yeah.
But he had to be taken off of TJ Reid in the replay below in Thurles, you know, when TJ went wing forward. And I think in the All-Ireland final, when Galway, you know, needed somebody to really grab the game at the scruff of the neck, he had a chance to do that because he was on his own a good bit, and he didn't do it. So I don't know why he's talked up so much about it, but I think they're the players that you've mentioned are probably the group of players that have, you know, have stood up most and deserved it most.
Yeah, I think, so who will we give it to? Like, I mean, this is just my opinion, and it's irrelevant what I think, but I think there's nobody outside Joe Canning deserves Player of the Year, and what's going to count against Joe Canning is that he got it last year, and he probably got it last year when it wasn't his best year. This has by far been his best year. He's been outstanding, man of the match performances right, left and centre, and almost single-handedly got Galway back into the game. And I agree, Cheddar, Mannion's been talked up ahead of Joe Canning, which is just bizarre to me. Like, Mannion last year, I thought, should have got it ahead of Canning, but absolutely not this year.
I think a lot of the hype around Mannion is he's very good coming out with the ball. So you mentioned there him on TJ Reid. I wouldn't have him down as the best man-on-man defender.
Right. He's eye-catching.
Yeah, well, he's similar to Mark Coleman. I mean, they need him to come out with the ball, or else, I mean, a lot of their ball that isn't just lumped long is coming from Mannion. He's the man who'll get out, carry the ball past one or two, you know, opponents, and then deliver a decent ball. So, you know, that's why, you know, you'd see he's just a lot more prevalent than the others coming out. A lot of the time you see McInerney win a huge ball, charge into two lads, but he let it off then, and a lot of the time he's letting it off to Mannion, who makes use of it, you know. So
he's
a key player there. I think that's why he pops up in conversation a lot of the time.
Right, so who are we giving it to here, lads?
I think you cannot look past Joe Canning. Of the group of players that we have spoken about, look, Galway were on the back foot in a lot of matches this year, and the one player every single time that tried to drag the team out, including last Sunday, was Joe Canning. So, you know, I'd have a little bit of a criticism about Joe in this year and maybe last year, that he relies a lot now on sort of free ball, and he doesn't win a high enough percentage, I suppose, of contested ball, you know, considering his ability and all of that, and sort of put himself about the team a little bit more in that. You know, he doesn't sort of contest that aerial 60-40 against them and win those, that type of ball. That little bit of a criticism against them, but certainly in the replay against Kilkenny and the replay against Clare, you know, when Galway were under serious pressure in games, and certainly last Sunday, he was the one player under pressure when his teammates weren't playing well, who really grabbed his team and tried to win a championship for them. And you know, I don't see any of the other people that we mentioned, even though some of them were good. And I'd also include Pat Horgan in that group. I had forgotten him. Great regard for Pat Horgan. He had a good year. But none of them would have, in my view, came near Joe Canning this year.
Yeah, Canning first, Conlon second for me.
I'd have to actually throw, I forgot him there totally, Keane Lynch has to go in the debate there as well, I think. And he's been definitely one of their most consistent. He's very solid throughout the league. He hasn't had a bad year. Got one of the crucial scores against Cork, get them going again, could keep them involved, you know. So I think he deserves a shout. It's a funny one. There just hasn't been someone who really dug it by the scruff of the neck. Normally, like, take, you know, Austin Gleeson a couple of years ago, or Shamey Callan a few years ago, who were just head and shoulders above everyone. A lot of, like, I mean, the whole Limerick team this year were quite good, you know, some of them very good. Nobody really was, they didn't rely on any one player.
That's the thing. They're like the Dublin Galway, senior footballers.
Yeah, Galway are similar. Yeah. So the two teams that got to the final weren't as reliant. So if Cork got to the final, you know, you could point at one or two or three of them and say they wouldn't be there if not for them, you know. Like, I mean, yeah, you'd be talking Horgan, Harnedy, Coleman, Fitzgibbon. You know, there's a couple there that you just say, take them out and you're done. So,
yeah.
But I just think that the two teams in the final are just very finely balanced, aren't they? I don't think none of them have mad years. Oh, I suppose it'll have to be Joe, wouldn't it? Really?
Joe, okay, so we're three for Joe's. Young player of the year, lads, quickly, is Kyle Hayes and Darragh Fitzgibbon. It can't be going to anybody outside of that. It's a toss up for me.
I'd lean toward Fitzgibbon. I think he's very impressive. I just think if you like him and Coleman, they're so young and Cork rely so heavily on them.
Already,
it's unbelievable. Yeah, I think Kyle's a fantastic player. Great final. He had a great year all round.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, if Limerick lost him, it wouldn't be as big if Cork lost one of the two lads, particularly Fitzgibbon. So
I'd agree with that. I think Fitzgibbon has been hugely influential for his team, and certainly I think, you know, probably stands head and shoulders above everybody else.
Here's a question though: Limerick wouldn't have won the All-Ireland final without Kyle Hayes, and they wouldn't have got the draw against Cork down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh that he got the equalising point without Kyle Hayes, and would they have even qualified without that draw? Or they probably would.
They mightn't have beaten Cork in Croagh Park either if Darragh Fitzgibbon had sit on the field.
Right.
You know, so there's other ways of looking at it. But there's one other honourable mention I want to give there is for Carlos James Dial, a very young player, one of the Joe McDonough, you know, very, very good young player, and you know, unfortunately he's not in the media eye to get the plaudits he deserves.
Yeah, okay, that's fair enough. So we're agreed there in Darragh Fitzgibbon. So the all-star team, lads, are we all agreed on Owen Murphy in goals? I'm agreed on Owen Murphy in goals anyways. I think we'll all get off to a good start. Liam's looking up.
Honourable mention to Anthony Nash, I think. Like his book out game is similar to Cluxton. He's changing it up. Everyone's trying to emulate him. I think the reason Limerick didn't crush Cork, or the reason Cork got ahead compared to Galway, is because as soon as they score, he's ready to take a poke out, and he's going to hit it 80 yards accurately. So
yeah,
he almost prevents you setting up the way you want. So I think, you know, definitely deserves a mention. But yeah, Murphy's long range points, like, you know, saved.
Yeah,
should they bet us? They bet us based on it, you know. So.
Yeah, and his saves as well have been eye catching. Murphy's been the outstanding. I agree. I'd be more scared of Nash if I was playing next week than Murphy, because he's got such an array, but Murphy's been better.
I think King Murphy brings one other thing to the Woolley that's going to be needed in the games, certainly in the future. He gives an outlet to his full back line in terms of coming off of his goal line to be able to take ball. I'm not talking about puckouts now, I'm talking in general
play. Right.
He his shot stopping, his puckout strategy, his that ability, and obviously, as Lee mentioned, his ability to score long range frees, I think puts him ahead of anybody else. Yes.
Okay, so now we have to be aware of this, and this is a little kind of bugbear of mine, in that Limerick won the final by a point and they have 7 representatives. Galway lost the final by a point and they've only 3. Now, if Galway had won by a point and Limerick lost by a point, it would probably be Galway 7 and Limerick 3, which I don't agree that a point difference, and this is the way it's always been done, and I think it's wrong. I think the finalists are overrepresented, because it's the same in the football. If Mayo played Dublin in the final, we've seen 12 All-Stars from both those teams and like one from 3 other teams, which is like not what the All-Stars should be. So I want to bear that in mind based on our team here, because I wanted to be more representative of every county. So we'll try and find players that, and it's all relative, because you can only play so well as far as your team gets, and All-Stars is meant to be individual performances. So if someone's outstanding for Dublin or Wexford in the 5 games they've played, is that any different? Their team didn't get to the final. Is that any different to a player who's played outstandingly well in 4 games and all right in another 4 for a team that wins an all, you know what I mean? Like, I honestly think that the All-Stars has lost what it's supposed to be about, you know, because of such a if their hands are tied, there's 10, 11, 12 from the All-Ireland finalists, so you're gone.
Yeah, well, look, to the victors of spoilers, that's kind of how it's always gone. But as well as that, because there was traditionally so few games, you know, that extra 70 minutes, and like over the past 5-6 years, it's almost that extra 140 minutes, because you're playing a replay as well, so that you would be, you know, you'd be prevalent in the mind of the people selecting this, and in, you know, the mind of the public. So
yeah,
that was why you got it. Now though, you know, they're with so many games, you're getting a much bigger sample size from every player, isn't it, really? You can see them in 4 games, see what they really have. So, you know, you might see it evolve. We'll see.
Might see it evolve.
You keep banging the drum there.
Right, so we'll go to full back line, lads, and I'd say we could do a full hour on this now, so we'll snap through it. So we'll go right corner back. So the Sunday game picked Finn from Limerick in corner back. Now, have we any other shouts? So Brown from Clare, was he number two or number four? I think Spillane and Donoghue were very hard done by. Spillane was outstanding. He got a bit of a scutcheon off Galan in that match, which ruined. Does that ruin five other brilliant games? I'm not sure. Like, he tied up John Connellan. How do you see the fullback line going?
There's one there that isn't there that I think just really just deserves to be squeezed in. David McInerney from Clare. I think you pull him out of there. Again, you know, I probably do tend to focus on key or foundational players, and I just think, you know, the last few years he's been half injured or fully injured, and you know, they haven't been, you know, on a in title contention, I suppose you'd say. I know they got to the Munster final last year, but you know, after that they weren't as strong, and I just think he steadied the ship so much this year in return. I think he just closed a lot of players out.
The problem for McInerney is he's played most of the full year full back, and Dahi Burke probably, like, he's got that sewed up cheddar. So, like, we'll say Dahi Burke is a given, and we've defined two cornerbacks, and absolutely one of the two should be from Limerick. I'm not the pundit here, you tell me which one should get it.
I think Richie English would get it, and I do agree with you. I think Colin Spillane was good enough. I know he didn't play well in that game, but he certainly played well in matches before that. I would go for him over Sean Finn as cornerback.
Okay, so we'll go Murphy, Spillane, Dotty Burke, Richie English. Is that fair enough?
Mm-hmm.
We'll agree on that. So right, half back line, lads. Hannan looks to have centre back sewn up, and Mannion in contention for player of the year, and Burns from Limerick. I find it hard to find fault with this unless you have options from. So we're looking at Dermot Burns from Limerick, Declan Hannan from Limerick, and Pádraig Mannion from Galway. So what do you think? Do you agree with that, or is there anybody that we're missing?
I think I saw Crummy playing with G. Liam. I thought he was very, very impressive this year. Extremely impressive, to be honest with you. And to be honest with you, I suppose to spread it or not, I think Dermot Burns was good. What I really like about Dermot Burns, he's definitely changed his game. There was a time Dermot Burns would get ball and just lamp it up in the air, and you know, obviously this is where Limerick have changed so much in terms of the precision that are passing that, and he, you know, I really admire somebody that has changed their behaviours and the way they play and that. So I admire Dermot Burns great, but I was actually very impressed with some of Crummy's game. He's an air game, ground game, front foot distribution and all of that.
Long range points,
and I'd actually go for him.
Okay, what about you, Liam?
I'll give it to
Dermot Burns is losing out, and it's actually, I actually think it's Dan Morrissey that gives all the lovely ball to Flanagan more than Burns. Dan Morrissey's constantly knocking those ones into the ground, into the forwards. He kind of supplies the forwards. I think Burns is still like wants to get that long, he wants to get that score. Right, so we have Crummy, we've Hannan, and we've Pádraig Mannion. Right, so okay. So, geez, Limerick are down two here, lads, from where we started. I'm okay if Limerick get five, right? So we'll continue on. So the Sunday game team picked Dara Fitzgibbon and Keane Lynch in their midfield. You'll be doing well to say that's not going to be the midfield, but I'll leave it up to you.
I know, I'd agree with that. I think also it's a real good mix. You've got a very athletic player who can go box to box, and you've got a very, you know, very technical player with great vision to be able to spray a ball around the place. So probably if you had a midfielder, you're looking for little mixes here, somebody that can actually give you, you know, you don't want to see the same type of player in both positions. And I'd probably go with 8-9 there, Liam.
Liam, agree.
I think they'd be my 1 and 2. Honourable mention to Colm Galvin. You know, very, you know, a top player. You'd need a bit more muscle in there if you're going looking for a combination there. I don't think you'd throw in Lynch and Galvin together. You might get mown down, but you know, he definitely deserves a mention. He was very strong.
Right, okay, so we're agreed on that. So that's our midfield. Half forward line, they went with Peter Duggan, Joe Canning, Tom Morrissey. So we'll all agree Joe Canning, he's our hurler of the year, is centre half forward. Who are we looking at? Like, geez, it's hard to disagree with this one too. I'm trying to share it around, but like, I mean, from outstanding individual performances, like Duggan and Morrissey have been brilliant, Cheddar.
Look, I think Duggan has had a very, very good year and was very influential for Clare, and you know, obviously Joe Canning is a cert for centre forward at 11. I'd go for TJ Reid over Tom Morrissey. You know, we're sort of, I suppose, pulled in a little bit by the whole excitement around Limerick and all of that. And I've seen a lot of, I've been at a lot of Limerick matches this year, including the semi-final against Tipperary in the league below in Thurles that evening. And Tom Morrissey was very, very good within the structured system that they play. But you've got to say that TJ Reid carried a Kilkenny team for a lot of matches this year, nearly on his own. He won a league final for them on his own. You know, so what more does he have to do? And, you know, bear in mind he was being injured for a long time as well. So I think you cannot, just because he's TJ Reid and he's 6 or 7 or 10 or 15 All-Stars and All-Ireland medals already, you know, we need to throw it around. We need to pick the best players in those positions. Incidentally, we are, I suppose, picking players in the positions that they played in.
That's the thing, you see. Yeah, so does TJ lose out to Joe Canning?
Well, look, he did play wing forward a number of times in Kilkenny this year, you know. Yeah. So I think we're not picking him out of position here.
Okay, so it's not over the top to move TJ Reid. Would you agree with that, Liam? Have we got consensus?
Yeah, TJ was the only man I'd squeeze in there.
Yeah.
I'd probably take out Morrissey as well. You just can't move the other two, and I think TJ as well. We looked at it there at the time. TJ had something like 40% of their scores from play in the league. Like, he was just, he's just so important.
Going based on the fact that we are actually taking the league into consideration, but like a lot don't.
A little bit, and I think, you know, the reason I'd have TJ there over Morrissey is he takes the freeze as well, you know, so he's just a must, like, he has to be there, you know?
So TJ was outstanding against, I think it was Wexford down in Nolan Park, but was the talk in the few games before that TJ hadn't really carried his league form into the championship? Do you know what I mean? So are we looking at a little bit of a lull there for TJ? I'm going to challenge you on TJ here, lads. You're not going to, because I had Tom Morrissey for player of the year here, so you're going to have to make a good
play. The replay below on Thurles, there was probably a couple of players, but he was definitely one of them that kept Kilkenny in the game. So it's not just necessarily league form here. It is championship form as well. And, you know, just think of it for a minute. Try marking that half forward line and think of putting the half back line out against them. You know, I think it'd be very, very difficult to play against.
Okay, right. So the full forward line then that they have is Graham Mulcahy, John Conlon and Seamus Harnady. Now Aaron Gillan loses out in that, which is the big one. So it's whether, like, Graham Mulcahy, you pretty much can't leave him off. So is it Gillan versus, you can't leave Conlon off either. Is it Gillan versus Harnady, and where do you go on that one?
Oh, that's an unbelievable four line. I actually thought the halfback line was most competitive. I'm going to change it to this one. I'm going to throw Wally Walsh in there anyway.
Wally Walsh,
just, I mean, it's because the group stages were so long ago and he was half injured in that replay, he got taken off, that you mightn't remember him as well, but
he was brilliant.
He was carrying them. Like,
TJ
was down and Wally was the man who was up, so.
But he doesn't beat Conlon for 14.
I don't think for 14, but I'd say he squeezes Harnady out.
Yeah, we think Wally Walsh squeezes Harnady out.
I think just about. I can't get rid of Mulcahy because he was the hero and he...
Jeez, we can't get rid of another Limerick, lads. We'll be lynched
and,
here.
And the moment this brings to mind when I think of Mulcahy is them down by a couple of points in Porky Cueve, man down. And do you remember O'Donoghue
got over the
hook,
line.
Yeah, and they just turned things over. That's just epitomised him for the whole year. He's just so valuable for them, you know.
Yeah.
So can't move him. I think I'd have to get Wally Walsh in there, though.
Okay, then we've no Cork representative then, lads, from Munster Champions, which is if we do that.
We've not got Colin Spillane, cornerback.
Oh, Spillane, sorry, my fault. Yeah. We got him in.
I think Gillan has been more consistent for Limerick throughout the year than Graham Mulcahy. I love Graham Mulcahy as a hurler. I spoke about him a number of times earlier on in the year on the show, Willie. But I just think Gillan has been more important to the drive forward of Limerick this year, maybe, than Graham. And I take the point, he had some really good tackles, which is unusual for Graham Mulcahy. He's not that type of hurler. So he definitely has upped his game here. And I just think that Pat Horgan, consistently throughout the year, has been better than Seamus Harnady. Seamus Harnady was excellent in a couple of championship matches, but not as consistent.
The Munster final, he was brilliant, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So we're struggling to find. This is difficult because you've got Gillan over Mulcahy, you've Patrick Horgan over Harnady, you've Wally Walsh over Harnady. So I have to have a casting vote here on this, obviously, lads, because this we've finally.
Before you go off to that, actually,
this is how the All Star selection committee.
Sorry, I can't let the show go without complimenting Liam here beside me. Moved up to full forward this year, was absolutely crucial to the way Dublin played. And Liam, you were very, very close to a breakthrough here this year, and you know that yourselves where you are. So if we just want to use that over that term honorable mention, I cannot let that go without Liam, the importance and the impact that he made with Dublin. And I also think the Tipperary full forward from Silver Mines, name slips my mind,
Jason Ford,
was very good in the earlier part. I mean, he was the name on everybody's lips up to maybe around May sometime. You know, so there's a number of serious players here in the full forward line.
Alright, okay, so this is a difficult one. And, like, I mean, I suppose, Liam, just to mention that, like, I mean, you're performance in full forward, you're almost like a mix of Johnny Glynn and Flanagan mixed together, in that you have that size but you like to break to the wings, you know what I mean, a little bit like your movement is not the movement of a of traditional target man in full forward.
Nice. That's because I'm making it up as I go along.
Do you know, we had Conal Keeney on the show here not so long ago, and I was trying to quiz him about the tactics and all, he went, we didn't probably think about it that much. Which is kind of, when Liam's there we give it to him, and like kind of that's kind of the way it is, that maybe there's a bit of over analysis sometimes.
Chip and chase, chip it in and run it out, let's see what happens.
Alright lads, I'm going to have the casting vote here, so I'm going Mulcahy over Galan. Unfortunately, I think Mulcahy has just been like buzzing around the place, and I think Galan getting sent off against Cork and missing that Waterford game probably counts against him. Can't go against Conlon at full forward, and I probably agree with you, Patrick Horgan over Harnedy, and I think Wally Walsh, I don't think he did enough to get in there, so we're going to have to agree on this, because my casting vote, Mulcahy, Conlon and Patrick Horgan, can we agree on that?
Yeah, that's a good team.
That's our all-star team. So I think Jesus lads, Limerick are down to 4, Galway are at 3, Clare are at 1, Cork get 2 then for Munster Championships, which I think is fair enough, and Kilkenny get 2, TJ and Murphy. Nice spread there lads, without that All-Ireland winning team dominating the whole thing. Agree? But still have the most, have the 4 versus everybody else's 3 and under.
Yeah, what's strange about that, well,
I hope I've added them up right now, because I've done it straight. Oh, Clare have 2, Conlon and Duggan.
Well, I hope what I'm going to say is true as well now, because we haven't marked these off, but there's actually no Tip player on it that reached the league final, which is pretty unusual.
They got hammered in the final.
I know. I'm just making the point about Tip, that, you know, considering the strength of their county and, you know, their expectation at the start of the year, they're on everybody's lips as being the favourites for the All-Ireland.
Yeah.
But equally, there's no Waterford player on it, and they were in the All-Ireland last year. So it just tells you that, you know, performances change a lot in from year to year, but also throughout the year.
Yeah, no, exactly. Right, listen, lads, we'll leave it there. We've just gone over the hour there. So listen, thanks very much, Liam, for being a guest pundit. Did you enjoy yourself? You might come back again.
But yeah, I loved it, yeah.
These current players are killing me. You can't use them. You can't double up as pundits anymore. It's terrible. Cheddar, thanks very much. That's our last show of the year, everybody. Well, it's our last show at inter-county level. We're obviously going to continue on with 2 podcasts per week after the football final's over, and it'll be a combined hurling and football. So if you want loads of club action, you can tune in for that. For inter-county season, we'll be back next February. Right, good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I should go, and so it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.